The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With me is Gina London, leadership communications expert, Sunday Indo columnist, former CNN anchor, Frances Fitzgerald, of course, former Taoiseach, a current member of the Gender Equality Advisory Committee to the G7, and Philip Ryan, head of content with the Sunday Times Ireland. Philip, the thing we were discussing before the break was Kenny Jacobs, or rather speaking to Kenny Jacobs about the passenger cap. He says that two of the US carriers can't get their heads around why they are prevented from putting flights into Dublin that they would like to. You can kind of see their point.
Yeah, I can't get my head around it as well. It just, this whole fiasco, let's call it, has just been dragging on for a while now. And look, the Green Party were in there. They had a certain ideological point of view when it comes to carbon emissions emanating from planes, etc. So look, they were against it. The Programme for Government says, you know, they're going to look at it. Dara O'Brien, the new transport minister, is setting up a stakeholders forum. So none of this is happening quick. As everything in this country, it'll be years before a decision is made.
There has to be some way to bypass that. I'm not saying do anything that is outside the bounds of the law.
But when
when you have Tourism Ireland literally spending a fortune to try to coax these people in when they are saying it is costing us hundreds of millions by them not coming in.
I totally understand why the US Airlines is. I mean, most ambassadors spend their time going around and our staff all around the world encouraging more people to come to Ireland, and then suddenly they're being told they can't get slots in Dublin Airport. And we're having 20,000 fewer coming in, visitors coming
in. Just for Patrick's weekend.
For St. Patrick's weekend. So it's completely shocking. And Kenny seems to be putting his hopes in Dara O'Brien, although from a constituency point of view, it's a tough call for Dara O'Brien as well, being, you know, representing a part of Dublin impacted particularly. But I mean, it does seem there is a suggestion that there may be a legal way around it and that the attorney's been brought in. Now, whether that is going along the lines you're suggesting, Anton, that there may be a legal way of government taking a decision. But they've always said, no, it's a planning decision. But why is the planning decision around it taking so long? It's completely unacceptable.
In an instance like this, Philip, the planning system is still controlled by legislation passed by the Oireachtas. You could legislate your way around it if you really wanted to.
Well,
no?
there is a huge bill. I don't think it is 100% passed. The actual reform of the planning hasn't been implemented just yet then. And that could see some changes around who can block planning decisions, who can apply to lodge objections. But the reality is we have all this stuff in place because of all the, let's call them, janky decisions in the past and various things that happened around planning too, to make sure we have a buffer. But it's just the speed of things. It's always...
But everybody's getting, quite correctly, up in arms about the OPW and their posh wall or their expensive bike shed or the Arts Council and its IT scheme. We are losing this much and a multiple more having this problem.
And there's other threats to our economy as well. And the tourism is always the thing we could fall back in. Francis will remember, even in the bad days post-crash, that you had like the gathering initiative you actually could rely on people like that to bring some money into the economy. And now we seem to be just, you know, shooting ourselves in the foot.
Well, it
on
says
this
here the minister is positively inclined towards removing the cap and he is not ideologically opposed to intervening, as his predecessor, Eamon Ryan, was seen to be. Can you pin your hopes in that?
I wouldn't want to pin him too hard. 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp. Now, a huge amount of analysis about what Micheál Martin will need to do and what he can possibly achieve and what pitfalls he needs to avoid when he goes over with his bowl of shamrock on Patrick's Day to the White House. Gina London, we discovered that this is now Irish-American Celebratory Month, or whatever the proclamation was. Can we read something positive into that? If Trump has gone to the bother of making this an Irish-American month, it would suggest he doesn't want to be seen to fight with the Irish in the White House.
Absolutely. Take this executive order that he signed a couple on Friday and run with it. This is, by the way, also March, which he's not talking about, is also Women's History Month. If you haven't heard him talk about that or sign any kind of executive order. So when he puts it up to the forefront and he talks about how the Irish-Americans are great and how they, as he said, they voted heavily for him, it's important to pull into that, lean into that. So if I were an advisor for Micheál Martin, I would be saying, do the Dunbeg talk, do the Irish spirit talk, do his golfing. You know, he loves golfing. How many millions of taxpayer dollars has he spent on the golf course since he took office? And have in the private setting other things you might want to get across. But you've got to wrap it in a package of flattery for Donald Trump, because that is the only language he speaks. You do not go into anything heavy and deep. You play the Macron card. When you're in the Oval Office, you touch his leg, you do the handshake, you smile. I mean, you do. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is not a serious person. So he's not a serious politician. He's a transactional guy. He's a reality TV star. I mean, seriously, this is who he is. So you've got to play by that. If I were also coaching him, I would be advising him on the little quips or the one-offs or the ways to deflect if anything happens to go in anything serious in that pool spray there in the Oval Office. But keep it light. Keep it upbeat. It's not about being Tweedledee and all the stuff that everybody hates to talk about here, but it is about being bright and charming.
Now, there is a challenge.
Charm offensive is the way to go with Donald Trump.
Because we are told that the Secretary of State, in the only instance of him raising a trade imbalance, we are told, with an EU member state, was when he was on the phone with Simon Harris. Now, Simon Harris says he didn't mention trade imbalances. The Secretary of State's department says that he did. That would suggest it's right at the forefront of their thinking.
Who knows? I mean, the idea that you can give advice to Micheál Martin going over to meet Trump, I mean, as if any of it matters because Trump is so unpredictable. But I do take Gina's point. If I was to put my money on it, I would say that Micheál Martin will come out much more on the Starmer-Macron line than he will on anything else. So he's not going to do anything to
stabilize. Can't see him pushing Trump's leg, though.
That's a bit far, all right. That's a bit much. But like,
why
this
Trump
is
does the thing that he did, and now obviously a lesser version of it, but does the thing where, like with Zelensky, there is a trade imbalance, you're billions behind what we spend with you, we need to solve that. Does he do what Bertie Ahern is suggesting and stare at the ceiling silently?
You have a quickie deflection line. If he mentions that he wants a part of the $1 billion of taxes that Apple's supposed to pay, or any of those types of things that he's been bringing up little by little since he took office.
I know what Martin say. We've had good discussions on that. We'll continue that.
Well, exactly.
I mean, he won't aggravate the situation.
Well, and that's the thing
to
do.
The other thing is, this is such a nuanced occasion. I mean, this is, you know, years and years, decades of kind of cultural connection to Ireland. Obviously, the trade, we're saying we're the sixth, you know, biggest investor in the US, but your Canada was the second. It doesn't matter a damn to Trump decides to have a go on this. So, I mean, I would think that it's the preparation and the nuances are enough. I mean, Vance was certainly teeing up Trump to have a go at Zelensky. So if Vance isn't there, he won't have that. I don't think they want to get the Irish offline particularly.
Right. The
but the trade,
will have to have a
surplus is an issue.
The part of the St. Patrick's Day events guide or schedule is always the breakfast with Vance as well in
exactly.
the morning. So like there will be an opportunity for Vance to, I don't know, bring up Enoch Burke or anything like that during in an awkward situation.
I would bet you $1 million that J.D. Vance does not know who Enoch Burke is.
Well, I don't know. The Joe Rogan podcast knew about him, so that could pass on.
Who thought we'd end up with international diplomacy being with that as a possible prospect?
Correct.
Now, the one thing in all of this, Philip, is having tried it a couple of times myself, the Taoiseach is not somebody who enjoys being interrupted. And Donald Trump interrupts all the time and heckles and makes comments. Are we absolutely sure he is going to remain as cool as is required?
I think so. Look, I don't know. Generally speaking, it is a very short time that the media are given for that video. Like, I've been over a few times and it's quick. You're in there for the guts of 5 minutes, two lads give a few little remarks, and then the US media starts screaming questions so you can barely hear yourself think, and then you might get a few questions and then you're marched out. So there's not a lot of time.
Was out in one piece of in one piece after this, it'd be seen as a major triumph.
Sure.
Now, that's
yeah.
the reality. They're all setting it up yeah. to be something extraordinary.
But it is interesting as well, Leo Varadkar, writing in the Sunday Times, says that Trump is essentially what you see on TV is what you get behind closed doors as well. So it's the same kind of shtick. It's the same kind of, you know, bombastic kind of comments and ribbing people and wanting, like Gina says, wanting to be flattered and told what a great fella he is and how special he is and all that. So whatever happens with that, the small bit we see as the media, it is it's the thing that happens after.
It's all completely shocking. I mean, if you want to really talk seriously about this, I mean, the whole geopolitics is completely upended now. Mm. I was at a G7 meeting and one of the phrases that really chilled me was, we can't rely on our allies anymore. The traditional allies are no more. It's completely changed.
It's horrific.
So it is like, we don't actually talk about that
but
that much
this
here.
Is a
but
full
this is
schedule.
Like a complete change in terms of the democratic world and who you can rely on. And
well, and you have to be very careful when you're having those congressional one-on-one meetings, you're talking to committees. When the whole Irish delegation comes over, there will be, in addition to the spray and the Shamrock Bowl, there will be all of these little smaller discussions. Mm-hmm. Who can we trust? What's really going on? What intel can we really get? What's our best
on
play?
That, Gina, on
those
the thing
are the
of the
questions
intel.
That will be have to be very
Absolutely.
Carefully decided and strategically organized. Because
front
it's
page
true.
Of the Irish Daily Mail, and again, it's one of those where you think, you know, 10 years ago, you'd have thought this is whether or not it turns out to be true. The fact that the question can be asked on the front of a national paper: is Donald Trump a Russian asset? Why British intelligence no longer trusts the US president? And this is a story inside saying effectively that the British intelligence services don't want to share intelligence with the Americans anymore because they can't trust the president.
You cannot trust the American president. You cannot trust the American president because he is a habitual liar. You had the last week during some of the ongoing Senate confirmation hearings in the Foreign Services Committee, there was a senator from Oregon, Democrat. Yes, but he did ask these Trump appointees, is Donald Trump an asset? Because he is acting in every other way as he is. If he's not formally one, then he is certainly one de facto. When you've got a president who's lying in the State of the Union about the situation, when he's saying that he trusts Putin and the obvious the lines are not there, with the Republican Party is changed from being anti the whole Cold War era and anti-Russia and suspect of Russia to, oh, we trust him in this. And it is absolutely bizarro world that we are in right
How
now.
How is it playing as well as it is with the Republican voter? Because the classic Republican Reagan voter regarded the ultimate enemy as being the USSR and then Russia. The fact that that has entirely reversed, how is that being so
well?
So
you can see from
swallowed?
You can see from the polling that's come out that he's the lowest ratings of any president this time ever in history, and that's not Democrats, that's Republicans and Democrats. The number of people that have come out and that are online talking about how they regret their vote is increased from the Republican MAGA side, increasing, and that's probably a little less the Russia situation and more that we don't trust him because he said he was going to fix our economy, and we're paying $4 an egg now, and that's we've got. The agricultural secretary encouraging Americans to buy chickens and raise them in their own small farms in their home. I mean, it is.
Is that a real thing?
That is an actual real thing that happened this back way. The
chicken.
Secretary of Agriculture was on Fox News encouraging people to buy their
own. I don't know how many votes that'll get.
There are organizations right now that are actually renting chickens in the United States. I'm not making this stuff up. And
you can lease a hen.
There you go. It's a whole different take on a hen party.
Yeah.
But that article is interesting because it says Russia approached him in the early 2000s from a business point of view, invested
in the 80s.
In the 80s as well, but renewed it in the 2016. And that it was the business contacts that they sort of seduced him at that point and got this alignment with him, which he now is showing to an incredible
degree.
With this
universe competition and all that. He's had an ongoing relationship with Russia for years and years, and he is a transactional person. I would say he's not a serious politician, but he is a serious businessman, and that's for sure.
But it's one
and
of the things that I'm always surprised
by. The way that you think about this ongoing, and don't forget the 2016, the Mueller report that came out, did absolutely say that there was Russian influence in the outcome of that election. He likes to make his little soundbite about Russia, Russia, Russia. There wasn't, but there was. And it is clear that
Russia completely
is
underestimated
absolutely doing
Russian
propaganda, misinterest in wars, digital information. That's why the Romanian election was postponed recently. They are an absolute thing to be concerned
this
about.
This leads us to what do we do about it? And one of the things that is now becoming much more clear is that the EU, and I'd be interested, Francis, in your take on this, is there an opportunity in this? Is there an inflection point for the EU? Because we talk about defence spending, we talk about stepping up to support Ukraine, we talk about becoming effectively a global superpower player. Is there an advantage in this? Is this the final reckoning for Europe?
At one level, it's tragic. I mean, when I was elected to the European Parliament, we were talking about the green agenda, the digital agenda, equality, Brexit. Then we had COVID. Then we had the conflicts. And now we have the EU absolutely transformed into discussing what? Defence strategy. We've given Ukraine $190 billion. trained 73,000 of their troops in the EU. The entire focus of the budget, of the politics, and we're slightly outside it for, you know, a whole range of reasons, but we are part of it, of course, in a different way. But the whole focus has moved eastward. If you were living in Moldova, the Baltic states, you are terrified that Russia is going to come in tomorrow. Yeah. And even the Finns are defending their border more than ever before. So the whole, and Ursula von der Leyen's letter yesterday to all the council colleagues, such stark reading. It is so disturbing. It's as if we are on the brink of war. And it is about defending. It's about building up defence. It's about changing the rules so everybody can spend more on defence, because the threat of Russia is so great. We don't feel it quite as much here at all compared to if you're closer to Russia. But there is this real and active concern that you will not stop Russian aggression. And if you have Trump supporting Russia in the way that he is, unless they change Europe. Of course, it's an opportunity, but what a sad and tragic opportunity. I mean, Angela Merkel tried the support to Germany, you know, with or to Russia from Germany in terms of buying Russian gas. We saw where that went. That was trying to work with them. Didn't work in the long term because they invaded Ukraine. So I do believe with the Ukrainian situation, we're defending democracy, we're defending our values against an authoritarian state versus democracy. That's what's going on.
It looks, Philip, like we're going to be under more and more pressure to put our hands in our own Irish pockets, because there's a lot of analysis on defence spending and us getting things like primary radar, suggestions that we're, I think, in the entire Western seaboard, one of the things it says, effectively from the Arctic through onto to sub-Saharan Africa, we're the only spot on that seaboard that doesn't have primary radar.
Yeah, this is John Mooney in the Sunday Times again.
Your paper, Philip.
Right, paper.
Very subtle.
No.
Very subtle, Philip.
Is there a limit on how many times I can say?
But we're counting.
But yeah, look, this it's talking about having to. Ireland now has to kind of bypass certain rules around tendering so we can actually get up to speed on some of this stuff. And this is kind of basic stuff as well about radar, so you know what's actually going on around your seas. This isn't what exactly you do after that is the next step. Like, we don't really have a lot of stuff to, you know, we've no deterrence as such. Russia, if it ever got this bad, is not going to see Ireland as a difficult, it'll be a day's work, I'd say, to invade Ireland and it'll be done. But we're so far off where we need to be when it comes to defence as well. Like, we've just kind of taken it for granted. You know yourself, sure. Francis, for years it was never discussed. Like, we paid the soldiers nothing. We had kind of...
But even discussing it now, I know there are people who'd be saying, sure, this is daft, the notion of Ireland having fighter jets or having primary radar. It is so ingrained in us.
Fair play to Simon Harris. If he can talk about the Sunday Times, I can say Simon Harris has done a very good job in terms of bringing this to the fore, increasing defence spending, talking about the sort of surveillance we need. I mean, this is about dealing with cybercrime.
I'm conscious that Gina London from the Sunday Independent wants to make a point.
Well, I was only going to agree with the direction I think that Francis is going in the sense that Ireland has an opportunity to lend its voice to solidarity and to unification around the Europe stance vis-a-vis what may be happening in the United States, and that is putting Europe in its own situation to try to make the difference to what, as the Prime Minister of Poland said, Donald Tusk, that Russia's essentially started another arms race. So even if it's not an increase in fighter jets per se, but it is an increase in defense, even though Ireland's not a member of NATO, it is a member of the EU, and how can it show that it's in solidarity with this required unification of message right now? And I think when you're behind in the amount of the money that you spend on defense to Malta, you can afford to spend a little more.
Tech saying, we in the EU have pretended we really didn't need to arm against Russia. Guess what? 50 years of defense neglect has come home to roost. Another, Ireland is so utterly naive about its position as a neutral state. Bulking up defense and going to war are two completely different things, and we have now sleepwalked into a situation where the US no longer has our back. I am so, so fearful now. I never thought it would come to this. And that is the problem. Coming up after the break, a lot of analysis of who the likely runners and riders are for the next presidential election. Bad news for Francis Fitzgerald. We'll get that after the break. With me is Gina London, leadership trainer and Sunday Independent columnist, Philip Ryan, who's head of content with the Sunday Times, and Francis Fitzgerald, former MEP. former Taoiseach and now member of the Gender Equality Advisory Committee to the G7. And according to the Mail, not likely to be our next president, because what they have said is that former Taoiseach and Justice Minister Francis Fitzgerald, under whom current party leader and Taoiseach Simon Harris started his Leinster House career as a parliamentary assistant, is being pushed by supporters in Fine Gael. But according to senior party sources, Mitch Fitzgerald is not floating Simon's boat. Harris favours a celebrity or a sports star or someone who is not seen as a typical politician. Our condolences.
I'm shocked. I'm really shocked that Simon would say that. I don't believe he said that, actually. It's really terrible. But I'm much more concerned about the minister who told the Mail on Sunday about Cynthia Niverku, who's also been mentioned. The paper doesn't refuse ink on this topic. She's very impressive. This is about Cynthia. But she will have to serve her time first. This is one for the old boys club. What a weird comment from a minister.
As in the presidency is one for the old boys club. Is that the suggestion?
It's not clear whether it's the nomination for Fianna Fáil is one for the old boys club or the presidency. But it's the weirdest comment, like the one about Simon.
Do you think it'd be a combined government candidate?
I think that's unlikely. Yeah. I mean, I think like Fine Gael has never won the presidency, so that's a challenge this time. I doubt if there'll be an agreed candidate. It's unlikely. But you never know with the presidency.
I hadn't realised that. Fine Gael has never produced a president.
No. Very close. With Higgins, but never, won it. So that is a challenge for the party. Interesting, Mary Lou is saying here she doesn't, she's happy to support a candidate for the left. So there might not be a Sinn Féin candidate either. So there's, lots of speculation. Barry Andrews and Sean Kelly, terrible. I mean, the European Parliament's going to be decimated with all these MEPs who want to come back, and they've just been elected. It's really disappointing.
So runners and riders then, we have Barry Andrews, Sean Kelly, Bertie Ahern, Cynthia Niverku. Now, these are the ones where there is speculation about them, yourself as well, and Mairead McGuinness.
Peter Casey is in the mix. He's the only one declared.
That's right.
This is his chance.
Do we really want a kind of a 7-month campaign on the presidency? Is that what the country needs at the moment?
No other elections.
That seems like no time at all from my perspective, but yes.
So I have to ask the formal question. Are you ruling yourself out? Are you ruling yourself in?
I haven't done either. Let's see how the whole issue and, how it develops over time. I mean, Fine Gael will have to have a convention and select obviously whoever they want later in the year.
In terms of the possibles, Philip, from your perspective, the likelihood of Bertie Ahern, he's also failed to rule himself out. Has he a prayer?
I don't see that happening. I don't think people's memories are that short that they would suddenly think, let's give Bertie Ahern another go and put him back. And would Fianna Fáil be mad enough to want to have all that stuff from the late 2000s dragged up again and reenact the entire tribunals that he sat through and go through all the various things around finances?
When you see what's happened with Michael Leary and the recent discussions, do they want to go back and bring up?
I don't think they would.
Well, it's interesting even the way the Mail has a picture of the three of them, Cynthia Niverku, Barry Andrews and Bertie Ahern, all standing beside each other. And the way they caption it, Cynthia Niverku is described in the final sentence of the caption as, mother was involved in local politics of Fine Gael. Barry Andrews, we get grandson of Republican Todd Andrews. Bertie Ahern, Lord Mayor of Dublin and tribunal witness.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not letting it go.
Yeah.
If you have a view, 5310 6 or 087 1400 106. We're staying with the Mail. The front page of the Mail on Sunday. Meghan's dad reviews her new show. There's something of a clamour of people to criticise Meghan Markle's terrible new programme.
Meghan Sussex, Anton. Meghan Sussex.
I'm so sorry. I made the worst of all mistakes.
She pointed out in the show.
I thought she would have been Mountbatten Windsor if you have a surname and you're one of them.
Get me on all the royals on the what the last name should be. No, I've watched clips. I can't get out of my reels on things on TikTok. There's enough clips of her, enough comments about it, but I have not. So I'm going to defer to the will or won't she run for president, Miss Frances Fitzgerald, because she has officially watched it.
This stuns me, Frances. I cannot imagine you sitting down to watch with love, Meghan.
I was so curious. But I have watched The White Lotus before. Then I thought, I'll have a look at Meghan. And I just sort of played it. I'm actually stunned by it. I mean, I did not know how to make a balloon arch for a children's birthday party.
How enlightened you are
this
now.
This is very useful. Or how to make heart-shaped sandwiches for your children. I mean, this is complete, perfect housewife stuff. I it's actually this woman who's portrayed as the, strong woman who took Harry off to America, who stood up to the royals. And it's a complete lifestyle show. And her dad says, this is, he's a bit like Eugene. He says, I haven't seen the show, but I've seen a ton of clips. But he says it's a load of rubbish. I've read many stories. I might sit down and watch it one day. I think, Anton, have you watched it?
I'm glued to it. I can't get enough of it.
You were cutting fresh flowers from your garden and making marmalade and jam and lemon.
And have you made your own bath salts yet?
Oh, yeah. Homemade preserves. Can't exactly. get enough of that. I'm just baffled it's by a her decision to do it, and B, the fact that there's nobody close enough to her to intervene and say, don't do it. I mean, the fact that they put that in the can and then decided to release it on the world.
But this is her, obviously. I mean, she totally is... Her value system around these kind of lifestyle tips and what she does, it's so different to what you might have expected. But, you know, she's presenting herself as absolutely expert in all these little, you know,
well, this is the thing that I go put on your previous
tips.
Hat.
It's Martha Stewart, but without the warrior princess that Martha Stewart is. But seriously, I mean, it's
genuine,
little,
or
a little
is it
too
false?
Trad wife in this day and age, where initially when they were coming out and making their own mark in the United States, the thoughts were that they wanted to be known as philanthropists and they wanted to be known more on that scene. So this doesn't seem the same causal that you would
Absolutely.
Have thought. So it's surprising to me that she would make this choice.
How do you square it with modern feminism? Because there is an argument that says that modern feminism is about a woman's right to choose the way that she wishes to live her life, whether that be as homemaker or whether that
Absolutely.
Be as...
Absolutely, and it should and, well, and it should be. And yet, because that they had... she's not consistent, and I actually am not... I'm not on anti-team Meghan, for the record, but she isn't consistent about what she wants her image to be. So is she the philanthropist? Is she the... social worker that goes out to Africa and helps in the different ways, or is she? And you can be both, to be fair, and I think that's part of it. Maybe I haven't watched the series as it develops. Maybe we'll see other things besides the perfectly cut flowers
well,
and the jam.
Thomas's quote is, you have to be authentic to hold. This is the dad's quote. You have to be authentic to hold people's attention.
Yeah, who they haven't talked to in years, yeah.
When you're stuffing a turkey's ass, it has to look like you're having fun doing it. Unfortunately, Meghan has never been authentic. She has to think about everything. She's not spontaneous. Everything she says is pre-planned and rehearsed.
And yet, I have to say, yes, she comes across an expert on these issues. Now, there's a cast of thousands, obviously, and every ingredient and every saucepan and spoon and whatever she needs is handed to her. She's got a great array of kitchenware. Mm-hmm. I mean,
if you want to watch a great program, you got to watch Jennifer Garner's makeup pretend cooking show, because that's where real authenticity comes through. She's lovely.
What's this?
Jennifer Garner.
I don't even know who Jennifer Garner
is. Jennifer Garner is she's the first Jennifer in Ben Affleck's life. She's the ex-wife of him. And she has on her Instagram page, she does a make-believe cooking show. She's been doing it for years. Millions of people follow her. And
make-believe?
Yeah, because she's doesn't really have a program. She just does these little clips, but she has millions of people follow her from it.
She makes mistakes,
and she makes mistakes, and she laughs at herself, and she's joyful. And it just feels... Everything that isn't
Meghan
the curated,
is so sincere about
but
it,
she's
how much she
curated
loves it.
Sincerity, and I think that doesn't come through the same way that I'm big Jennifer.
I just
Garner
want
fan.
Someday to live a life where I have enough time spare that I can homemade dog treats. You know? Anyway, let's move on to more important things. Very interesting story, or very interesting interview done by in the Sunday Independent with the lead for obesity. In Ireland, talking about Ozempic, talking about all the various different drugs that are now available. And one of the things that he is saying, which is a sort of a drum that he has been beating for some time, is this notion that obesity needs to be treated like a medical condition, whereas it is always treated as if it is a moral weakness, and that we should be prescribing Ozempic and the other drugs right, left and centre.
Why would you not? If there's, I mean, I acknowledge that Ozempic hasn't been on the market for the 8 years it's typically required for long-term results to be determined, but the short-term results that are coming in are fantastic about not only what it does for appetite suppression and the results that it produces, but also some of the other things about what it was originally intended to in terms of kidney support and some of the other things. Why would you not? If you've got a patient coming in whose BMI is over whatever it's required to be, I think there are some parameters around that. Why on earth why would you not at least give them a trial? Because I understand from Ozempic, you start at a particular reduced dose. You can move it up. You can move it up. So you're not starting into something that's...
But he's marvellous. I mean, I think Professor Donal O'Shea is just a fantastic person in terms of describing this and the work he's been doing for years. And it's getting more attention now. But he describes obesity as a chronic disease and that we should treat it. He said, this is a bit like blood pressure in the 70s. We didn't kind of really take it that seriously because we didn't really have treatment. Now we have treatment. We know you can do so much for it. He says the same about Ozempic. I remember when I was Minister for Children and the Growing Up in Ireland survey was, you know, it's done every few years. And I remember being absolutely shocked at the number of three-year-olds. I think it was close to 20, 25% three-year-olds who were obese. So we have an extraordinarily serious issue here, which, I mean, it is multifactorial. Like, we do have to think about all of the different impacts on, you know, what leads to that situation with three-year-olds. But, I mean, he is saying you have the medicines there. There's a lot of, he's actually saying there's a lot of GPs who aren't using Ozempic, who should be using it to help their
he
patients.
Also has, he has an example of what he says, the kind of treatment that the medical community, or the attitude of the medical community, he said, I had a, this is him speaking to Niamh Horan, I had a patient who went to their doctor this week. They broke their leg, put on a couple of stone during the recovery, and they went to their doctor about starting treatment. The doctor said to them, look, just zip your mouth shut.
See, that's where they're not thinking about it as a medicine. They're thinking about it, oh, is it like
lifestyle
Ozempic is
choice.
A cheat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Ozempic's not a cheat. If you've got an illness or if you've why would you not have that as something
but I assume
that would supplement
there is an underlying
your
thing
situation.
That people say if you eat less and if you move around more, weight comes off you, so it's your own responsibility.
Well, it's not as simple as that because different calories have different ways of burning off. And so you can eat less, but are you eating particular carbs? Are you eating fiber? Are you eating processed foods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? When you get on Ozempic, my understanding is that it's going to help curtail a lot of those things that may have been bad habits that have developed since you were three or since you were in an accident. But my goodness, why would you not take a medicine if it's going to help you? What is the mindset that says, no, don't take it? Because it's not the adverse effects. Take it for a month. Take it for 3 months.
Yes, some of the publicity around it has been about people, you know, film stars and so on, you know, at the Oscar
night. The idea that it's a cheat.
Welcome to Ozempic night or something, you know. I mean, it's been prescribed, if it's been prescribed for the wrong people. He's saying there are people who are obese who need this. It's the right drug for them. And they deserve to get it.
And no, I'm not wishing to be mercenary. You would have thought it is in our common interest. It's a lot cheaper to get somebody a bit thinner than it is to deal with them in an acute hospital setting when it materializes into something else.
A bit, isn't it? Like, that's what people are a bit concerned about, that this didn't seem like something that you could treat like that.
Well, you see, it's not being dealt with generally in the media and in discussions the way he's speaking about it today. Yeah. It's been seen as much more a kind of a lifestyle issue that you want to be
seen. He also has some very depressing realities about obesity. He's quoted as saying that for the vast majority of people, there is metabolic adaptation, which means that if you lose any weight, the body fights you to put the weight back on and switches off your energy burn. So that if you have been, he says, if you put on a couple of pounds over Christmas and quickly lose it by January, you should be all right. But that if you've kept it on for 6 months or a year or 2 years, quotes, that's your new weight.
Well, it is true. Your metabolism does change. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the research supports that. And so if there's a little way to inject that metabolism to get going, again, speaking as obviously not a physician, then I don't understand why you wouldn't. And I think it is the mindset where you think, oh, it's celebrity, get cute quick for your Oscars red carpet outfit. But it's not. And when you come at it from a physical health perspective, back to Phil's point, if it's going to help prevent the long-term cost of the effects of being obese as you're aging, et cetera, then of course it would be worth the investment initially.
It is funny though. I mean, it is difficult in a policy perspective to get focus on the chronic issues. We react very well to those acute things, like, I mean, road safety is a case in point, but things like alcohol, things like obesity, which are actually the big killers, very hard to get people worked up about them.
Except the GPs, there is this new program where the GPs now run the chronic diseases program, where they see people with a chronic disease on an ongoing basis. And that was brought in a couple of years ago at a community level for GPs. And I think that's very good. But I think what he's saying today, it's really called to the medical community to give this drug to the people who need it.
If you want to get in touch, 53106, interesting text. We were speaking earlier on, obviously, about the issue with EU rearmament, or rather further armament. 3 years in and Russia hasn't conquered Ukraine. How can they possibly conquer the whole of Europe? I'd posit Crimea as evidence of their efficacy. As I say, if you want to get in touch, 53106 or 087 1400106 on WhatsApp. Big thank you to my panel this morning, Philip Ryan, head of content with the Sunday Times Ireland. Final mention.
Sunday time.
Francis Gerald, a member of the Gender Equality Advisory Committee to the G7, possible presidential candidate. We don't know. We'll find out later. And Gina London, leadership communications expert and Sunday Independent columnist.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.